Hello, welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJH287, also on LinkedIn, where I post more content. The website is dsmsports.net, where you can find every episode and more content. And of course, the podcast is available on whichever podcast platform is your favorite. What an awesome show for you guys today. It's not every day I get to speak to the president of a major pro sports league. And my guest on the podcast today is Alex Magleby. He is the president for focusing on strategic communications for Major League Rugby. You'll hear about Major League Rugby's administrative setup, their organization, their structure, who they're going after, how they market the fans, how they market the sport, what it's like with the fan experience, and how important that is, the player buy-in. This is just such a cool conversation. We really get to go deep with a high-ranking league executive and hear about how they're going about building a growing sport with certainly a very popular sport around the world, with an opportunity to continue to grow it in the U.S. with the Rugby World Cup slated to come here not too long from now. So I will stop rambling and talking and get to it, because you're really going to learn a lot from in my conversation with Alex Magleby of Major League Rugby. I am back on the podcast with today's guest. I'm so excited to be speaking with him. We could have been recording already for the last 10, 15 minutes. We're already well warmed up. My guest on the podcast today is Alex Magleby. He is the president of strategy communications for Major League Rugby. Welcome to the podcast today, Alex.
Neil, great to be here. Super excited. I mean, we've already had a podcast in the pre-show, which is fantastic.
Hell yeah. So psyched to speak with you. We are speaking on the eve, so to speak, of the MLR season for 2026. Excited to hear all about it and learn all about it. Before we get in the meat of our discussion, Alex, tell us about you. You have a fascinating path. You've been doing so much in rugby in the US for years. And tell us about your career path and what you're doing today, and any tips for folks that want to try to do what you do.
Yeah, cool. I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. And like a lot of kids at the time, we played multiple sports, and I hope that continues to be a thing. It wasn't overly specialized. In the fall, we all played football together. In the winter, you skied, wrestled, basketball, hockey in some cases. And then in the spring, we were lucky enough at our high school, we had a very prolific rugby program, started by the legendary Larry Gelwicks. They ended up making a movie about him at one point, Forever Strong. USA Rugby used to have national championships. We would win it seemingly every year. A lot of the guys I played rugby with went on to, really successful even NFL careers, so some really good athletes. And so I was lucky that I got exposed to this really high level rugby early on, where the game was still just growing in certain pockets in the United States. So very cool. And then I went to college, and in college, I found out later after I'd already gotten on campus that they had a very good rugby tradition that was Dartmouth. So I ended up showing up to the first practice that day, and you got 50 best friends. Like every rugby team around the world, you have 50 best friends, and they're from all different walks of life, socioeconomically, internationally, and everything else. And it was so cool. And the camaraderie of the game kind of keeps keeping you into it. And then I started playing for the national. There was an engineer, started playing for the national team my senior year. And it was that, or I had a path to go to investment banking with Morgan Stanley. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to commit 2 years to this rugby thing and see what happens. I ended up continuing to play for the national team, both 15s and seven aside, and kind of using that as a career jump off point to become a professional head coach at Dartmouth as the game started to go professional. So this is all happening kind of the game. Internationally wasn't even professional until the mid-90s, and so this was like the first steps of professionalism for players and for coaches, and the whole ecosystem didn't had kind of been the amateur game, where the ideals of the amateur game, and that all shifted like immediately in August of 1995. So I was on the front end of all that professionalism, so very lucky. But like any niche sport at the time, you were going to pay all your bills doing that. So I started an analytics company. This is the early 2000s. The same time kind of Moneyball was happening, and we
I know,
found
it's
out
like
later the Oakland A's, but I was trying to figure out a way to do that for other sports. I'd grown up again with an American football background. Every video was, cut and pasted, and we had scouts, but we had a staff of 10 doing that every week, and trying to figure out a way to make that as easy as possible for coaches. And so I got into that game pretty early on with video analytics and using video as a teaching tool, and then to drive your stats and use those to improve performance. And we ended up creating a company that, we did most of the flow sports in the United States. So hockey, basketball, field hockey, lacrosse, of course, rugby, and all the national teams and top colleges and pro leagues became our clients. So I was learning very quickly about how everybody else did their business in sports. Their operations ran. So it was a pretty cool way to get in the back. And so as I continued on in my career as a player, then as a coach, then as a general manager, I had this in the background, this analytics work and experience and a technology startup that really then helped inform that, combined with the rugby stuff, informed my career moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you have 28 hours in your day or something? Like, our
Fortunately, at one stage I
priorities
was young.
are.
Fortunately, one stage I was young and I had energy, right? So yes.
And I love too. I guess we should like d just describe your role with Major League Rugby today and how it looks.
Yeah, so working backwards, I started in December at the league level. So the league decided at the end of this year, we traditionally have had a commissioner who is a CEO. The league, our board, which I was serving on at the time, decided to split the commissioner's office, the commissioner's role, into two positions this December. And they asked if I would serve as the co-president in strategy. And then Graham, who had been the COO, is kind of co-president of the operations side. So he's running the rugby side of the business, the referees, all of those kind of
Right.
things. And
And
I'm.
then previously you were the New England Free Jacks, correct?
That's right. And that's right. So my job right now is kind of forward looking, and my mandate is, how are we expanding? What are we doing with our brand? How are we storytelling? What does our media look like? What does our future look like effectively? Graham's really worried today about, our great partnership of what's happening on the ground today. So it's kind of the split the commissioner's role. Before that, I had been the co-founder and CEO of the New England Free Jacks. We started in 2018. We ended up having our first full season in 2021. My partner and I, Eric Anderson, started the club, and then just built from there. And we, looking back, we had about a 50% year-over-year growth on our revenue numbers, attendance numbers, eyeballs on TV numbers, all of the really important metrics for a business. So it was really cool to see our growth. And of course, then on the field, the last three Major League Rugby championships we had won. We had a really good GM and Thomas Kindly, a good head coach. So I had that experience for the last 8 years building at the ground level. So now I get to take those lessons and kind of apply it to across the league,
Yeah.
right? All our franchises.
And I want to go back to your start too, Alex, and like how you chose rugby as your sport. You mentioned playing other sports and it's great. And like, especially even, like now rugby is more well known, I think, in the States, and we'll talk more about that as well. But was it like a little bit of a punk rock decision? Like, yeah, I'm going to play rugby. Everyone else is going to try. And there's no college scholarship necessarily at the end of
Yeah,
the tunnel you're
no.
chasing, and now you have NIL. Like, so how did you decided to discover and play it and foster your love for it? And how do you think that plays out today? Like, how are youth discovering it today?
Yeah, so loved American football, grew up playing American football my whole life, did Little League baseball, soccer. But as I got to the high school level, American football was huge in the fall. In the winter, I actually played basketball and I wrestled, but they both programs, when you got to high school, said you couldn't ski. Ski was my true love of my life. And so I said, okay, I'm not going to do that. So in the winter, I skied. I'd grown up playing a little bit of ice hockey, so multi-sport dimension. And then very fortunate that my high school had a really good rugby program. That was a spring sport. So we all played football in the fall, whatever in the winter. Spring, we got back together for rugby. 150 kids in the rugby program at high school. Some very good athletes. I was a good student. I decided I wanted to get as far away from Salt Lake as I possibly could for my college days. So I applied to a bunch of schools out east. I got into a bunch, went and visited campuses, walked around campuses, ended up finding a gym in Dartmouth. It was just the right fit for me. It was outdoors. I could still ski. Great engineering program, but still a liberal arts education. So you could take Shakespeare, but also still semiconductors, right? So it was pretty cool to have that duality. And then when I got to campus, I had matriculated. I was freshman orientation week. Someone saw I was wearing a Highland rugby t-shirt. Highland was quite famous as a high school program. Said, "Did you play rugby?" And I said, "For Highland?" I said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, come to practice." And I hadn't even thought I was going to go to rugby. I was actually trying out for the rowing team at the time because it was this romantic idea of going to a school out east. Like, oh, they have rowing. I'll do rowing or lacrosse or something. Now they're saying the lacrosse is actually very technical and you got to play it for a long time. But anyway, went to rugby practice and, 50 best friends and a whole career later. That's kind of how I ended up continuing on with rugby. It's a game that always pulls you back. And what pulls you back is it's super fun. At multiple stages, I've had these opportunities to go do something else in engineering or finance or entrepreneurial or tech or whatever the case may be. And I always find myself coming back because it's so fun. It's so rewarding. The
No,
camaraderie can't be beat.
I
And I
remember
just.
being on campus myself at an Ivy, and you could tell the rugby players walking around campus because they had the thickest legs, and they were
Yeah.
like the best in shape, and they always were nursing some kind of injury somehow.
Yeah.
And that was always fun.
That's part of the external veneer, you know? You got to be tough or whatever. Yeah, right.
And how do you think about, like, because I mentioned to you, like, how kids are discovering the sport today, and how important do you see it for you, especially having your background with both USA Rugby and now with Major League Rugby? How important is it to foster youth playing the sport, getting that participation level? How does that translate to fandom, or is that just kind of like a bonus, like a side effect of what we're doing to market the sport at the Major League level? If people end up playing more, great.
Yeah, so there's two pieces to that. The business model itself is predicated on entertaining people. That's really important. So it doesn't matter if you play rugby, if you ever played rugby, we have built our entire business on these great experiences. And you saw that with the Free Jacks. You could show up at a game, there was tailgating, there was live music, very good live music that you actually cared about. There usually was a beer festival or a food festival tied into the atmosphere inside the stadium. You could bring a friend who may not be a rugby person, but you may say, you know what? You're going to really like because it's a stout beer festival, or you're going to really like the cheese and wine festival, whatever it might be. But you know what? Then the game happens. It's 2 hours. It's intimate. You don't even need to understand the rules to understand that this is really cool. I get passing and kicking and tackling and movement. I understand those all from kind of like the American sports experience. You can see their faces. It's highly emotional. A lot of jeopardy. Major League Rugby in particular has the highest competitive parity in any rugby competition in the world, meaning games are usually decided the last couple plays of the game. More than 50% of the games are decided by less than a try, so less than a touchdown in football would be the equivalent. That's more than the NFL, so I think it's 49%, and Major League Rugby was 57% last year, something like that. So high jeopardy, like that's amazing drama. Then after the fact, in most of our home stadiums across the league, we open the gates to the field. We allow the fans to come on the field. So suddenly 7,000 people are trickling onto the field. They're shaking the hands of the players who are tremendously accessible, well-spoken, great gentlemen, meet your kids. It's very accessible and family-friendly. And then in some cases, then a band starts to play up, you know, and we had the English Beat. We had Old Crow Medicine Show. Dropkick Murphys have played, like things like that at some of the venues across the league. Marshmallow in the championships in San Diego. Very cool. And so you get this whole day of entertainment. And even if you're not connected to the game yet, we promise you'll fall in love with that experience. And then suddenly that's the stickiness that you and I had touched on earlier that really brings you back. You're like, oh, that's really cool. And then I get dressed in costumes and it's just super fun. You know, that's just super cool.
No, I mean, that's what it's all about. It is entertainment, affordable entertainment, and that's how you can get people as a sample of sport. And also too, it becomes like an experience, an outing, and it's not just you're going for the sport, but you're also going for everything around it. And I love too the aspect of, especially at when you're talking to kids like it doesn't they don't know the difference between if a player if a professional athlete is the best athlete in the world, or they are just a professional athlete that's competing for the local team. They're the heroes, and so I
Exactly.
think that getting that kind of up close exposure is certainly really valuable.
I challenge you to find another major league sport, so the peak of the sport in the United States, where a family of four can go and get entertained and have a great time for less than $100. And you can do that at our major league rugby teams. And that's amazing. And it's so great. Oh, and by the way, you probably get an autograph in there. You can probably get a high five from a player.
So tell me too about like the nature of it for the athletes. Like, if you are an MLR player, do you have a second job? Are you also doing clinics or camps to make ends meet? Like, what's the reality for a professional rugby player in the US right
Yeah, it
now?
depends. Like some players make enough money that they live well in some of the most expensive cities in the US, well as they live there in the most expensive cities in the United States, and they're able to train for the MLR season, which is spring and early summer. They may then play for their national team other parts of the year. They may play for an amateur club team. They may coach. They may do a sales job. They may do nothing else but train. So you have a whole mix of that, and depends on kind of where you are in your life cycle and what you're looking to do next in your life. You know, we've got a great player for LA, Billy Meeks. He's originally from Australia, but him and his wife and their family, they put their roots down in LA. He's got a coffee shop in Venice, Boulevard Coffee. And there's multiple examples of that, of entrepreneurship happening at the same time, because they do have some space, they do have some time, and they, you know, they're not NFL salaries, certainly not, and they're not even the top of the world of rugby. But in some cases, they're enough that they can start working on other things, so they have a future after Their playing career is done.
Yeah, and I love this level too. Like I'm sure they understand that them hanging out after a match to sign autographs, like that's meaningful. That can move the needle for the league, and that's they're helping the league grow and ultimately gonna help their salaries in the future and all that in the next
I
generation.
can't say enough how great our players are at embracing that. They coach in youth after school programs. They do help with flag rugby competitions throughout the country. They're helping it with college and high school teams. They're accessible at the games. They're talking with you, not at you. They're just very good ambassadors for our sport, and they've totally embraced it. They've embraced it over social media. Some of them are hilarious, almost Savannah Bananas-like on some of their social feeds, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I very much noticed it as I've gone to San Diego Legion games myself, matches myself, and I want to talk to you how you think from a big picture perspective about converting demand and finding fans. Like I read an article recently about how DAZN thinks about reaching American football fans in Europe. They have the NFL rights in Europe, and so you think about like they. In one capacity, they are let's spend and find the existing demand, people who are already familiar with the sport, and let's go after them first, the kind of low-hanging fruit, and get them into our ecosystem, get them into the fold. And then in other countries where that demand is already being met, how can we then move the top of the funnel and get more people that are potentially interested and move them in there? So when you think about like Major League Rugby, maybe it differs by market. How do you think about let's find people who are already familiar with rugby, maybe they're expats, maybe they have people in their family that played, and let's get those fans first because those are the ones we should be getting, and then focus also at some point on building the top funnel. Like how do you think about allocating resources
Yeah,
and getting
there's
those
probably
fans?
different five groups that you would want to that you really target. Again, your market, it really depends, and you're bringing all these other additional micro audiences. But yeah, there's 40 million Americans right now who say they're familiar and fans of rugby, right? So in some capacity, whether they played at their college, back in the older generations, when it wasn't as prevalent in high school, people were exposed at college. Maybe they got exposed with their company. They went to the Hong Kong Sevens. They went to a Six Nations match in Europe. They've had some exposure to rugby. Maybe their children are now playing. So there's some participation connection, an important demographic to make sure they're connected to the growth of Major League Rugby and are a part of it. Then there are people who are looking at the last minute for events to do and just like to seek out something that's new, and making sure that we're making that as accessible as possible. We talked about costs, but also just like this is actually really fun. Like I pulled up the events to do in my town this weekend on a Thursday, and so I'm going to get excited to take my friends. I don't know anything about rugby, but looks like there's going to be a beer fest and this live music, and that seems like a really cool way to spend 2 hours. I'm going to go try that. So making sure we're open and connected to those type of people. Then the family friendly, it's again, you're deciding, going to Boston, am I going to go to a Red Sox game? I love going to a Red Sox game, but that is several hundred dollars to take the family at a minimum, just at a minimum, where okay, I can take the family in this really family friendly environment where there's something to do for the 2-year-old, there's something to do for my mother-in-law, 92, and they can all have a great time over those couple hours. It's only going to cost $100 to kind of make that a reality. So that family friendly accessibility is super cool. So you see, and then you got the urban professionals as well who are looking for, by urban professionals, what I'm trying to say are people who in college, they had a great experience, it was very social. Now they're working, they're a couple of years out from college, they're working is really important to them, but they're trying to figure out, okay, what is life now and what is my new community? And we see a lot of those bubbles being created at Major League Rugby events. The Free Jacks where it was at, our biggest ticket purchasing group, and people say this generation doesn't like to purchase, but they were our biggest ticketing purchase, were 20 somethings. So young professionals kind of looking for that next community, and then we were there to help connect the dots and help them build community, which is pretty cool. So there's four or five buckets there that are kind of generalizations that you want to bring in, and then again making as sticky as possible so they want to come back.
And are you like constantly trying to having to shift your brain around a little bit of like we are we trying to talk to all of them at one time, especially for national campaigns, or do we have to be really focused that hey, this is for someone who's not familiar with rugby, this is for someone who is this?
My experience is, and if you create, there's an avatar that probably works for everybody, and then everybody's like, okay, I want to be a part of that. And it's probably like a early 20 something who's looking for fun, safe, affordability. That's also attractive then to the family decision maker. That's also attractive to somebody who is connected to rugby. That was also attractive to the older generation who wants to relive that same experience. So there's or the aspirational experience for a teenager. So that kind of avatar in a lot of cases works from a marketing avatar perspective. But it's sometimes not the same language across the board, but I just want to make sure we're as transparent as possible that it really is kind of the same. It's really kind of the same concept when
Right.
all of them done.
And especially having markets go from Boston to San Diego, all across the nation. Like, is it incumbent on MLR to try to have a consistent experience, both in terms of the quality of the experience, but also the atmosphere? I mean, I can tell you, like, from having talks over the years with folks from like the National Lacrosse League, the NLL, they are unabashedly like, we are a party, and it's gonna be loud music, it's gonna be rowdy, and people are drinking.
Yeah, I love that.
It may not be great for families at times, but you still want the families there, obviously. So, like, how do you think about like having A, that
And you
consistent
don't,
experience, and B, the marketing?
and I think NLL has done a very good job of being clear about what they want. I think that our model exists because each team is a franchise, then we have a central league, and certain things the central league controls, and certainly each franchise controls. There's best case practices that the franchises who have sellout crowds and the most engaged fans. Then also are the most engaged fans on social and are the fastest growing fans or ones that have certain aspects to their in-game live experience. And the franchises historically who didn't want to do that, they're not forced to do it, struggled. And I think you're starting to see a bit more centralization around those concepts. Like, okay, these are best in class. I think it's going to take us another couple of years where it's all kind of like, I could be at a game in San Diego that speaks to people in San Diego. But also a game in DC, and it speaks to people in DC, but I know what the MLR experience is. You know, there's probably tailgating. You're wearing a different jersey than me, the opposition, but we're buying each other a beer. There's really good local food. There's a community, hyper community connection to these events. There's good live music. There's a lot of hangout time pre and post in stadium. I think those things are really important. There's songs, there's costumes, all of those things are really important.
That's really well put. And how then, like, do you tell the story of these experiences? Like, where does is a lot, I've noticed I mentioned I noticed some out of home here in San Diego. I've seen some on social as well. Like, is it about getting as much content out there of people having a good time, of showing the event around the event, and also but also then showing the rugby highlights as well? Like, what does that marketing engine look like, especially when it comes to content?
Yeah, I think if you like going back to the Free Jacks, what they did really good, what we did a really good job there was bringing that to life. So the 2 to 3 hours you spent on a Saturday at a game, that was the feeling we were going to give you for 30 seconds a day, which was a bit cheeky. It was fun. It was lighthearted. It was excellence. It was community driven. Like all of those things you'd fit into like kind of that social, what you would feel from the social media aspect. And I think that that's what we're doing now across the league, and you're starting to see that in more places. It's hyper community centric, community first, connecting those dots. The fans really drive a lot. It's excellence. You know, you've got people who work really hard. They're super fit. There's a kind of a size and shape for everybody, but they're chasing excellence. And there's a bit of cheekiness to it. And I think our sport has that cheekiness where you can have a bit of fun. You know, after the game, you hang out with each other. You don't take yourself more serious than the game, you know? I think that's
Yeah.
also really plays out into it. So those are kind of some elements that you see come across all of our marketing and all of our media, whether it's live, in-game, digital, broadcast, whatever the case may be.
And how do you think about player marketing as well in particular? Like, is it important for, I mean, everyone wants the sort of the NBA model, like everyone knows the superstars and all that. Like, is it important to have superstars? And what happens when you guys identify someone who either is a really compelling personality, really good on the field, or a little bit hopefully a cross section of both? And what does that look like in terms of like what you do with them and how you use them to your advantage?
Yeah, the nature of the game historically has not been about the stars, and that's a struggle for the game internationally. You have 15 players on the field. For the one person to end up scoring the try, 14 other people had to do their job well. Statistically, it's harder to drive. You know, even if you had an argument about who are the best players in history, it's not as obvious as like a Wayne Gretzky or a Michael Jordan, where there's a basket. It's very binary. Like it doesn't, you know, you have one or two kickers on a rugby team. Yeah, you could talk about who are the best kickers in history, but then the props don't ever really score. But they maybe it's, you know, in some ways like American football, you have your quarterbacks and sometimes your receivers and occasionally some other positions, but it's really the contest about who's the GOAT of this position. That's probably more reflective. And rugby historically hasn't done a great job of that, and Major League Rugby is trying to break out of that and have our relatable stories about our players come to the surface, which is pretty cool. And you've got 23 players on a raw match day roster, 15 on the field at once. You can see their faces. Pretty much every personality archetype that's ever existed in history is probably existing on that field at once. So there's probably, well, our issue is not doing a good enough job pulling the one or two out that may be the most connective. It's like we're trying to tell all the stories all the time, and that's probably a bit too much.
And from that sense, are you constantly looking to see, is there a player who's over-indexing on social, or is there someone who like and then we can seize it and maybe make them a center of a campaign, or is there a bit of I mean, I come from the hockey world myself, coming up in the NHL space, and there's a little bit of resistance that's changing now of players that don't want to be front and center because it goes against the what they've been trained and inculcated
Yeah,
for
like
their life.
hockey would be a great example of that because it's the team is so important, and I think rugby has a lot of those elements. Certainly, we're constantly looking and trying to help our players. What are some ideas that could be relatable to the non-rugby folks out there? What's going on? Some of the players in the world of rugby and USA Rugby have done a great job on their own creating that. Of course, Ilona Marr.
Right.
The work she's done, and she's really driven that with her own creativity, making it relatable to the non-rugby public. In only the last few years, that's exploded, but she's been doing that work for a long time, and heading into the Tokyo Olympics and everything else, and just being really her genuinely herself as much as possible and active every day. And there's a lot of good lessons there for a lot of those personalities exist in rugby and always have. But they're behind closed doors. They're not in the public face. It's like this humility thing. And I think, and hopefully, this generation, you're going to start seeing that change as we build up to the 2031 Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to like, yes, you want to be humble and not be on the team, but you know what? You can do better for the sport if you go out there and do a few more interviews or have some fun on social, whatever it might be.
And I think Alona showed that, when she's worked really hard and been really creative, and she has a great personality, and she's, made it relatable, and it's been genuine. And I think there's some other rugby folks starting to do that and making it, bringing their true personality out on
Yeah.
social.
You brought up a couple things there that I want to touch on. One being Ilona Marr and how that got on the radar for the Olympics, and then the Rugby World Cup, which is it's not tomorrow, but it's not too far away, and that's going to be just like we're all talking about the soccer men's soccer World Cup is going to be the thing that makes soccer a bit the biggest sport in America. Maybe the Rugby World Cup can hopefully have a similar type of anticipation for that. And so I guess let's start with Ilona Marr and what that did for awareness of the sport in general, of interest in the sport in general, and what you guys can do from an MLR perspective to capitalize on that. What does that look like in what kind of conversation are you guys having? What kind of strategy and tactics do you guys put into practice?
Yeah, I think going back to the original point is what are the lessons there that current players can take on board and practice and do everything else. I think she's an N of one in the work she's done, and it's been, I think, great for the global game. It's brought more eyeballs into rugby, and you saw that with TV numbers even when she was playing in the Premiership in the UK. Those increased while she was playing. That's awesome, and that is super cool. And she's a great advocate for the game. And a whole host of other things that are really important for humanity, like what's her saying, beast, beauty, bronze, that you can be strong physically and still be strong emotionally and mentally, and it's okay to be vulnerable at times, which has been really cool. I think that's a great lesson for kind of all of our players trying to figure out what they can possibly do in that regard and how they can tell their own story. Sorry, you mentioned the World Cup. 2031 Men's Rugby World Cup in the United States, 2033 Women's R Rugby World Cup in the United States. Amazing situation. I think if you look back to the 1994 FIFA Soccer World Cup in the United States, there was no true professional league. There was some kind of little leagues dabbling before that. We didn't create Major League Soccer until 2 years after that. And then kind of they were trying to build up in NFL stadiums. It almost died. And then kind of they started to grow in the 2000s as they built out new stadiums and new teams came on board. But at one stage, there was only four owners of the 10 teams. Like, it really struggled. Our model is such that we are trying to do everything we possibly can before then to build the systems and aggregate the fandom. So when we do get that once in a lifetime moment of a World Cup, so the Rugby World Cup, third largest sporting event in the world, suddenly there's millions of new fans of rugby because of the Rugby World Cup in the United States looking for a place to go. Those bridges are already connected. There already is a professional team in your area You can now go get your children to play in these areas. You can come and watch this great piece of entertainment of this new sport that you have fallen in love with. So that's our model is kind of building into that, which is fantastic. And that'll be really, really important, game changing. But as we build, we're still looking to like 35, what are we going to look like? 40, 2040, what are we going to look like? Which is pretty cool.
I mean, I love it. It's a great challenge, but also an opportunity to both balance of how are we gonna, how are we gonna maximize attendance in Major League Rugby and revenue in 2026, but also be thinking ahead, 10 years of what can we get?
And suddenly people are going to wake up at one stage and be like, oh, this is amazing. I didn't know this existed. What? This was easy. Like suddenly rugby is this thing. And it's been a lot of work. It's literally one fan at a time, one block at a time, one school at a time. And that's how it's growing right now. Just this very gritty and grind. And suddenly all those systems are in place. And then you have this like moment of like a Rugby World Cup. And it's like, oh, okay, great. And suddenly jumps, or it was like, see, told you so. It's just,
Totally. And how can you kind of find those opportunities, whether it is like, I mean, you said like one fan at a time, and you can have fans. And I think about like whether it's Malcolm Gladwell and Tipping Point or something along those lines, where like if you have one, a celebrity fan or an influencer fan can really move the needle quite a bit, or a viral clip can move needle quite a bit. Like, what are those kind of those novelty levers that you can keep an eye on for and make sure that when they do happen serendipitously, that you can take advantage and maximize the results?
And so I think that there's two parts to that. One is getting people to suddenly pay attention in a very noisy environment, right? And so those are kind of those celebrity moments, these things. But then what keeps them sticking? Why am I going to continue to pay attention to that? And that's really, I think, the magic sauce. That's where it has to be really relatable. It's got to be building a better community for me. It's got to be putting those ecosystems in place where like my life is better because this is in my life. Right, so it can't just be the shiny object. The shiny object may get you to focus on it for 30 seconds, but then what's going to get you to be a part of it and experience it for a lifetime? And that's really where we're trying to do the work on hyper community connectivity, almost like a modern day pub. And if like you go to one of our MLR experiences and you come out of it live experience, you say, that was awesome. That was like I met a bunch of people at a coffee shop and I want to go back. This is like the new town square. If we can provide that situation, we know then this will be enormously successful for the long time. The good news is we've all experienced that in our sport, and now it's just bringing it to more people.
I mean, I can tell you it has that social experience, that communal experience for sure, where and everyone it's like it's very I mentioned to you before we started recording, it's very welcoming. Like people there they I had a bunch of questions about what's going on, and people were more than happy to tell me about what's going on. And I also noticed too that something about my experience as a newbie that really stuck with me was you guys were prepared for me as a new fan who didn't really know all the nuances of the sport. Like, well, I noticed there was at every moment there was a scan this QR code and it'll take you to a video to show you what's going on and tell you about this rule. So like, how intentional is that and building that kind of that content backbone to make sure that we have these how-to videos, we have these things that make sure that we are always ready for the new fan to give them a welcoming environment.
Yeah, I think that is the nature of our sport. I think that's a really important piece. And then people who come into our sport then understand what the values of our sport are. They're willing to share those, and it's always welcoming. Like literally right now, I could show up with a pair of rugby cleats or not in some random town in Asia and find the rugby club, and they would be the exact same situation. It'd be hyper welcoming. It didn't matter what my political persuasion is or anything else. They would just be like, "You're here. You're committed to rugby. Great. We're practicing." Practice together, and then you probably go out and have a dinner together. Like it's just a very, very cool part of our sport. And so what Major League is rugby has done, and shout out to the Legion for the games you've gone to, for making sure that's carrying on, is just bringing that tradition to more people, which is really cool. And the Legion are playing the MLR opener this weekend,
Oh yeah.
which is awesome, up in Orange County.
And when you think too, like what is that archetype of the new fan that exists in your mind? I mean, we talked a lot about different fan personas, and like what is that like as explicit as you can be, like what does that journey look like in your mind? Like, what's the ideal journey? Like I just how do I discover that match? How and then I go to it? What makes me want what's the exactly
That's a
wanting
really
match?
good question. I think what we're saying is you're discovering it probably because you know somebody else who's going, or you saw something that was funny that you related to over social media, or you were tuning in on Sunday night to ESPN and you saw Sunday night rugby is on. So you're like, I'm going to check that out just because I don't know what it is. You're like, wow, that's a really high quality broadcast. They're doing a great job telling stories.
Yeah.
This game is action packed. There's high jeopardy. I want to go that to that live. The live experience is then super connected. You're like, wait a minute. This is actually affordable street level pricing for beer. And I'm meeting new people who are very welcoming, even though that I'm wearing the jersey of the opponent they're playing against. And again, you go through the on-field rugby experience. It's high jeopardy. You're really into it. It's like this human raw emotions that you haven't experienced in a while. You're like, I want to have that again. And then you stay, there's good music. You meet the players. You may have your kids with you. They get autographs. You may catch up with the college buddies. They suddenly love it. Then that passes on. And that's what we're starting to see is that flywheel effect.
Yeah, and ideally you'll get people in the system so you can retarget them with whether it's newsletters or ads or just get them to follow you so you can get increased content exposure and ultimately be that person that is going to stand up and say on a weekend, hey buddies, let's go to this rugby match instead of doing nothing, or it's an opportunity to have some entertainment, and it can be family entertainment too, to the point that we made earlier as
Yeah,
well.
and it's just affordable and fun. Like it's, yeah, great. Yeah, you can go hang out with your old college buddies and just have an awesome couple of hours. Be like, wait, that was amazing. It was like a better bar, you know?
Yeah, no, I like that. That phrase is in my head. Is in my head as well. That almost like a bar, but better and
Yeah.
more interactive as well. There's
Yeah.
just got more left here with Alex McAlee, President of Strategy and Communications for Major League Rugby. Alex, the time is flying by. This is freaking awesome. When you think about like marketing motions and promotional motions, I guess like are you do you think about it as like let's keep hitting singles and doubles and be consistent and be there, or do you think about like how can we take big swings and hit home runs and maybe strike out at times as well? But when we do connect, we'll hit a home run.
Yeah, I do think the fact that we exist is a massive big swing, and that's a huge grand slam. And you know, the fact that this continues to be here and grow as we still have this runway, you know, we decided to invest to bring the Rugby World Cup here via USA Rugby. That's the big home run, I think. That's the big swing. So
Yeah.
right now it is. I think, you know, it's just a series of, you know, a couple 2 to 3 meters at a time to make it more rugby, an analogy to rugby, and winning a couple rocks and keeping the ball and not trying a little crazy grubber yet, and just making sure we're keeping possession and moving forward. And I think then the tries, like in rugby, will start coming
Yeah.
in a bigger way.
Yeah, and
I took
ultimately,
your baseball metaphor and made it a rugby one.
as you should, of course. No, there's something to that, for sure, of making sure that we are, keeping the ball moving and always making progress. And now I'm gonna get drowned and lost in a sea of sports analogies here. I want to talk last, and I'll get to the Serbo stat in just a moment. The time is just flying by here with you and me, Alex. And I want to talk about the content strategy. We talk a lot here on social about social, about digital. This is a digital and social media sports podcast, but it's really broad business in general. And especially now, more and more of that funnel is starting at the content level. A lot of leagues and teams are thinking about, we are media powerhouses first, and sport is one of our many vehicles to tell stories. And so like. You only have so many resources, you only have so much time and abilities to do everything you want to do. But like what do you think about the content production should be like at the league level, at the team level? How do you allocate resources in that? Or really, let's get butts in seats first, and we'll create content along the way, sure. But that is first and foremost. That's how we're gonna get more fans. Like what's the better pathway to growth and to fandom?
Yeah, just maybe it would be helpful for us to look back at where we've come from. I think for the most part, it was very much, let's get the rugby product right. Let's make sure that that is something that we're really excited about from a global perspective, because we can aggregate global eyeballs. It's got massive competitive parity, meaning virtually every game is ending
Right.
at the end, like it's really close. Analogous to NFL, that's really important. Let's make sure the live experience, the live product, you know, the festivals we talked about and the traditions that you find in MLR, like access to the field post game, good music, local food, other bits and bobs that have around it, even if you're not a rugby person, you're going to love and have a great time with, and then you end up falling in love with rugby anyway, is right. And so that's kind of what we've done over the last several years, where broadcast has just been like, okay, we know we're not going to make a lot of money on broadcast right now, so we're going to just aggregate eyeballs, but really concentrate on those two things. Can't resource everything. So the quality of our broadcasts, we haven't hit it out of the park. This year you're going to see a shift in that. So now it's like the next layer of strategy, where we've got these opportunities with our ESPN windows and a few other things and some global eyeballs now, where we're like, okay, the quality of this broadcast, if we improve it, we should see an even greater impact on the number of eyeballs we're attracting to those very broadcasts, right? Because it feels better. It feels more like you're watching the NFL versus watching another niche sport. So there's been an investment in that. So you're going to see that this year. And the great unknown is how important is live going to be, like that, where we're curating and paying for that broadcast versus the user generated content or other content that we're doing that is short form, whether that's live or non-live, and how important is that? And we do know that that is really important for helping to drive audience to the former, but in and of itself, it's become its own medium, and it's kind of its own medium that not only bring eye you can aggregate eyeballs, but you can monetize, that we've seen with some other sports properties over time and a handful of others. So that is equally as important, if not more important, for our future.
No, I love that that thoughtful response too. And I one more thing I promise about the social stack because I don't get a chance to speak with a someone in your position too often, and I really would love to get your perspective on this subject. And you talked about being able to work with ESPN and getting broadcasts out in obviously a very reputable brand with the ESPN. That definitely helps. With the goal being getting some of those larger media rights deals, and where a lot of revenue can come from, it's probably still largely a gate and sponsor driven revenue paradigm right now, or model right now. But I'm getting to all this to be like, if you think about the distribution of games, of live games in particular, of that content, and yes, you can go and try to get that traditional media rights deal, go that route. We're also seeing leagues and teams, whether you look at Kings League, Baller League, or even what some of the Bundesliga is doing in Europe with some of their distribution. And you probably see where I'm getting at here with like, let's give access to some creators and let them live stream on their YouTube or on their Instagram. Or
Like, the
like,
Twitch
how do you
model
think
from
about that?
5 years ago is still very much like the model. And I think, as you'll see from our broadcast as we move forward, there'll be other entrance points and other ways by which people are commenting on the game. I think that's a really important piece.
But does that mean like, is there a world where you can say, let's make our linear live broadcast available to these next number of streamers that we identified, or these influencers that we identified, instead of having it be only you have to go to ESPN to get it, you can also get it from your favorite influencer on YouTube.
And that's why we've partnered with OS. We've changed our structure in terms of our we're brought, so OS Studios is now our broadcast and media partner. OS does like the big Call of Duty announcements, and you have 300 different influencers broadcasting a game of all of those type of things. So they're very good on the technology and the presentation of that, because that is the direction we're going.
Yeah, no, I love hearing about it. It's certainly a lot of innovation happening in that area, and it'll be a lot more to watch. Alex, I feel like we're just getting started. We just barely scratched the surface, but we're gonna have some more fun with you on our conversion segment. First episode of Service Stat coming up right now. What an awesome conversation with Alex Magleby, president of Major League Rugby. Just so cool to pick his brain on how they think about marketing the product, how important it is to really have that consistent experience and product across the world, across the country with all the Major League Rugby clubs, how they go about trying to develop new fans of the sport, and the ways they break down the fan segments and cohorts and try to unify a message, but also make sure that they are understanding how what draws each cohort to the sport and to the product and makes them a lifelong fan. Just so much good stuff there, but stick around because we're gonna have more fun with Alex with our quick hitting questions. But first episode's shareable stat. And since shareable stat comes, well, it comes straight from the platform. It comes from Snapchat, and they noted that they had these live topic chats, which is just kind of like an AOL chat room if you're old enough to remember those, or just a YouTube stream without the video if that helps a little bit more. Just a live chat is certainly around a topic. But the stat they shared was during a March Madness game, there were 40,000 fans in the hashtag basketball live topic chat. Now, and they said that it consistently does get tens of thousands of fans in there. And I say fans, it could be Snapchat users essentially. And really interesting to just consider, A, I don't know if you all would have known, certainly didn't know there were chats with tens of thousands of users, and certainly during the March Madness game and during live events, could that be an opportunity to reach a cohort that's Likely not on Twitter as much anymore. Not really, engaging in a live manner in public broadcast channels. They're mostly going to be doing that through WhatsApp chats, through group chats, maybe some Instagram DMs as well, or whatnot. But certainly around, if Twitter is no longer the at least the ubiquitous live sports bar that it used to be, where else are these live conversations happening? And maybe it is Snapchat to some extent, or an opportunity there. I wouldn't bet on it, of course. Snapchat's user base is still fairly limited compared to some of the more broader Meta platforms, where you have a much older audience as well as the younger audience on there. But certainly, all these platforms are starting to try to understand how can they really be that sec. How can they win that second screen? How can they be that second screen? What can Instagram do? What can TikTok do? We're seeing them, of course, experiment as well. Certainly, Facebook has in the past and will continue to do so. Twitter is still there. Threads, Blue Sky, etc. So that's Central Server Stat. 40,000 people in a basketball chat room, essentially, or a live chat during a March Madness game. Just really interesting. Think about it, ponder it, maybe take action on it, or at least consider it. More importantly, stick around because more good stuff coming from Alex Magleby of Major League Rugby. Right back from this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Alex Magleby. He is the president of strategy communications for Major League Rugby. Alex, you kicked ass in the interview. Are you now ready to get some conversions?
Now I'm nervous. Now
This will be fun. All right, number one. We didn't. We could have spent the whole podcast talking about your playing career, honestly. But so I want to hear a little bit about it. Tell me the most memorable match from your rugby playing career, and also the most memorable match from your rugby coaching career.
Oh, interesting. Playing my first cap, they call a cap the first time you play for your country in an international game. My first cap was in at the time, the recently built Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, Wales. We're playing Wales, US versus Wales. The Welsh people sing. It's packed stadium. They're singing "Bread of Heaven." It's amazing. That was my very first cap. So playing
So
against
cool.
Wales, which is one of the true rugby countries where it's just like rugby is everything. And that was amazing. So that's why I got my first international cap. Probably on the seven-a-side, so the Olympic version of rugby, two games that really stood out. One, we actually lost, but we're playing in Hong Kong. It's pouring rain. Everybody's complaining. It's like a monsoon, and we're playing Scotland. And it's one of those games where I just was like, I'm just going to go enjoy it because I don't know how much longer I'm going to play. And I remember really distinctly being out on the field looking up in this pouring rain. It's so wet. And just been like, I'm actually going to enjoy this. You don't enjoy the loss, but it was more the you didn't. I didn't get caught up in what sometimes happens in those situations. This is terrible. This is not what we signed up for. All those kind of. It was amazing. And another one, of course, is winning the plate in Hong Kong was fantastic.
Totally.
Super cool.
And how about the coaching career?
Oh, that's a good one. I think when we qualified to I. Took over in 2012 when we qualified to be on the circuit in 2013 in London. It was amazing. Playing in an empty stadium in the Olympic Stadium in Moscow for the World Cup. There weren't many Soviet Russian
Right.
fans, but nonetheless, that was a fantastic experience. And probably then as GM, when the US men won, we won our first World Series event. That was pretty amazing in London, and then followed up by Vegas a
That's
couple times
awesome.
later, which is
Did
super
I have to ask you, do you still play at all today? Is there a good infrastructure for people that are my age, your age, to be able to play rugby
Yeah,
recreationally?
so touch rugby, it's non-contact rugby. It's super fun. You can play your whole life. I play that a bunch. We actually have a league here at my kid's school, and it's all town rec, but it's flag rugby, and there's more than 70 kids play. More of the kids than play baseball play rugby,
Wow.
which is pretty cool. So that's fun. And then I goof around with them.
That's awesome. Yeah, the touch
I've never
rugby,
been so
flag
as
rugby.
good as I have against third graders, That's
No, the touch rugby, flag rugby are great entry points to the sport. You can definitely see that for sure. Number two, we're gonna go back to your Free Jacks days. I'm getting goosebumps just asking this question. What was it like being in that first Free Jacks
Oh
match?
my
Like,
gosh.
holy crap, we're doing it! Like, with the feelings, the atmosphere, the hope, and like, just take me back.
So it built up. So we became an expansion franchise in end of September of 2018. 20 days later, we had collected all of the best rugby players in that region, and we took a bus, or we would actually we flew up to Halifax, Canada, and we
Yeah,
played the
no
Toronto
kidding.
Arrows, who had just become a Major League Rugby team. So it was like we were starting to build. And so that first season, we played an exhibition season as we were bringing in teams from Europe. We played all the A teams of the Irish provinces, which is perfect for Boston. So,
Yeah.
Munster and so on and so forth. Those were amazing. And then our very first MLR game was actually in Las Vegas against New York, who's obviously the obvious rival. And we're playing in Vegas in Sam Boyd Stadium. And we got a great win in our very first game against New York, which was pretty awesome as our first time in an actual competitive match. And just you're sitting there being like, this is absolutely crazy that this has happened, and we've built up.
Yeah.
COVID hit right after, and then kind of we had this time period by which, but all of our Free Jacks games, but you go back to those and just they're all great memories. Happiest times of my life were those home games, because it's talking about the festival and the experience.
Yeah.
Of fans, win or lose, those are amazing experiences.
It's so special. What awesome memories. And it's kind of a perfect segue to my next question, which is, we could spend a whole episode on this, honestly, but the idea of having the localized model, having city affiliated teams, local affiliated teams, as opposed to what we're starting to see a little bit here with like the either touring models or semi-touring models. You see what the Premier Lacrosse League does. You see PWHL with their takeover tour a little bit. How do you think about that? Like, it's important to be a city-based model versus doing these neutral site games and being a barnstorming league, so to speak.
Yeah, I think I'd take that back to like centralization versus, a confederacy.
Right.
Centralization gives you a lot of control, especially if you're a media project. And I think the PLL has done a really nice job of that, of having central control, purchasing power across how they're working and creating content around each team, because it's all
Yeah.
so centralized. There's probably something to be said about that that's really healthy. At the same time, it's much harder to, when you're not burning it hot in one location, it's much harder to grow fandom and monetize that fandom in that area, right?
Right.
So we see this in world rugby. There's the Sevens series, that's the Olympic version. It's played in 10 locations across the world. But as an American, you're not getting up at 2 in the morning to watch it in Hong Kong in most cases.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So the only people in that live market are actually the game are really benefiting from this great experience. It hasn't proven to be this amazing media product because it's so disaggregated, and you never then burn it hot. But if that same thing existed, if the opposite of that existed, where there was a league and you each had a city, that may be more successful for deeper fandom on an ongoing basis. And we find that in the MLR, it's again going back, this is now the town square, it's community building. And every couple of weeks we're back there, you're back there, you're seeing the friends you just made last time, and now you're seeing them again every couple of
Yeah.
weeks. And then we see those fans carry over from Major League Rugby, then to the local amateur club teams, then to the women's semi-professional league. And it's a lot of the same fans because they're just carrying that community. So that's a fan, and then they travel to games now. And so that's a fandom that is growing and monetizable on a more regular basis.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating dichotomy to think about, to really drive home that local fandom of making someone that really has that connection to the team, as opposed to just, oh, it's Monster Jam. It comes once a year, and I can go to that, as opposed to people go
I
week in,
wouldn't
week
be
out.
surprised. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you see some of those teams that currently are doing the touring model in time sell franchises and be more.
Yeah, there's money to be made by selling franchises, of course, and we even saw it. I mean, the Premier Lacrosse League, after a year or two, decided to at least brand the teams as there is a California team and a New York team, and so they've taken steps in that direction
Smart.
for sure.
You're smart.
Number four, Alex, tell me, what's your relationship like with MLR and other rugby leagues? We're coming out. It's not that far away from NRL being in Vegas and Rugby Sevens in New York. So what's the relationship like with Major Rugby and other leagues around the world?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of informal partnerships across the board. So a lot of our players play in other leagues in other parts of the year. You see players play in the NPC in New Zealand in August and September. You see some players play in Australia, some in South Africa, some in Europe, some coaches who've coached in both and have gone to different places. And then certainly there's the international game that we're all supporting and making sure the US is doing well and other countries. We had, I think when I was at the Free Jacks, the World Cup in 2023, players on four different international countries in the World Cup, which was pretty cool. And then rugby, like most sports, when you get kind of the nitty-gritty of like professional coaches and general managers and CEOs and everything else, it's a very small world, like very quickly. And so there's a lot of friendships because again, going back talking about the camaraderie of this game
Yeah.
that exists and across, they're literally virtually every professional rugby club around the world is a phone call away. And that's really, really healthy. And I think people are really supportive of Major League Rugby. They want to see it grow. They want to see the game in America grow. That's good for everybody. A really strong rugby ecosystem in the United States.
Ultimately, everyone benefits if the sport becomes more popular in the States. And yes, if the NRL is going to go to Vegas and that's going to drive some more rugby fandom in general in the States, that's a good thing for everybody, for MLR as well as NRL as well as NPC and all above
Yeah,
board.
all of that. And NRL is league, which is a slightly different set of rules,
Right,
but
rugby league.
nonetheless, the most Americans don't really know the difference. If that's helping to educate or get people more to know that there's a ball that they can pass backwards that has lineage with American football and a whole host of other things is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that's a whole other angle as well, the rugby union versus rugby league as well. Number
Yeah.
five, you already told me this is going to be an impossible question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. The greatest rugby player of all time and the best rugby player in the world today.
Oh, that's a really good question. Yeah, as we talked about, it's really hard to kind of pinpoint a GOAT of rugby based on how the game is played and positioning. I'd say most people would probably say Jonah Lomu because he was so big for, I mean, physically he was big, but he
Influential.
changed the nature of rugby. Again, this was right when the game was going professional, and then he had this player who was so big and so fast. And he was known in the non-rugby world just as much as he was known in the rugby world. He's one of the few that you could say she was walking down the street and people would know who he is.
Yeah.
I think that's rare in our game where you're like, actually, I know exactly who that is and I'm not a rugby person. That's Jonah Lomu. Where there's some greats in the game like Richie McCaw, Dan Carter, or Johnny Wilkinson. I saw Johnny Wilkinson at the Philadelphia airport one year. And he had like 2 years before kicked, the drop goal that won England the Rugby World Cup, and he's just sitting there, and nobody had any idea who he was. Like that's the difference, I think.
Yeah.
And then you'd say right now there's a whole handful. Virtually the entirety of the South Africa team right now is magical. Some people would say right now Antoine Dupont, who's actually one of the owners of Legion, which is pretty cool. He won a gold with France Sevens at the Olympics, but he's leader of the French national team 15s who just won the Six Nations, and he's a bit of a pocket rocket and highly skilled and very strong for his position.
Plenty of debate to be had, though,
Yeah.
and we'll see the best rugby player in the world by the time the Rugby World Cup comes to the States might not be playing yet in a league, and so
Yeah.
time will tell.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, which is amazing, but I think the game is learning pretty quickly how to not only have stars, because it's always had heroes, but have stars
Yeah.
and figuring that out and tight, lifestyle around that and everything else.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to see some sports where the most popular or most well-known player is also the best player, but sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes it's the
Yeah.
player with the biggest, the biggest personality is the most well-known, which is an interesting dichotomy to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, just look at NIL and college sports a lot, and sometimes not necessarily the best players.
Totally. Next question for you. Coming down the wire here with Alex Magleby, President of Strategy and Communications for Major League Rugby. This is one I'm interested in this one. Tell me the online rugby influencer community or social handle that we should go check out right now. Like, what's one
Major League Rugby. It's there's no that's it. Major League Rugby. Yeah.
Is that a something that you want to get better, I guess, having a richer
Yeah.
ecosystem
Yeah. And
around rugby?
also, the Rugby Network is a great aggregator, kind of American sports stuff, which I think is great. We talked about Alona. She's fantastic. Yeah. I think there's a handful of those that are fantastic.
Sweet. Now we'll have to check out
But you
some.
want to know about generally about like what's happening in the world of rugby? Rugby Pass is good.
Okay.
Yeah.
And speaking of, we mentioned some athletes already. Tell me the MLR athletes we should go follow on social media right now. I mean, all of them certainly, but who's one or two that's really crushing on social?
Oh, I think Kyle Sakira, I think the Free Jacks did a great job with Kyle. He's, born and bred American, played at his high school in Rhode Island, played at St. Bonaventure University, played amateur men's club, then made it into the academy, the Free Jacks, and now is a stalwart with the Free Jacks. Arguably one of the best props in the country, should potentially be national team player, has this great mullet. Fantastic. I mean, Kyle's great. Kyle the Eagle. Is fantastic social, and every team has a player like that that's probably worthy. If you look at the Legion, who are playing Saturday, 3 p.m., Orange County. Billy Meeks talked about with his coffee shop. It's a pretty cool story
Love
as
it.
well. There's a bunch like that for sure.
We'll definitely link up Kyle in the show notes. That's awesome here. Number eight,
Yeah.
time to ask our food question. We always have to ask a food question because I love it. So a two-parter here. Tell me first the best meal to get in the greater Boston area and where to get it. And also, you spent a lot of time around Dartmouth. So tell me the best meal to get around the Dartmouth campus.
So Boston, there's some great restaurants, but I would say, like, if I'm just passing through real quick, I'll go grab, you got to get a lobster roll, something from James Hook, down on the water. That's probably just a great go-to. Cheap, easy, and always tasty. Around Dartmouth, there's a town just north called Lyme, New Hampshire, and there's a restaurant bar there called Stella's. That's fantastic.
Love it. Always
Yeah.
good to hear about the foodie, the where to get the best
Yeah.
eats. That's great.
That's awesome.
Number nine, you've been in some great big leadership positions throughout your career, and obviously are today as well. So tell me the most important leadership lesson you've learned throughout your career.
Oh, what an interesting question. There's a lot of ways to answer this, but one that's probably telling right now, I'm a father of three. The former owner who passed away of the Toronto Arrows, great guy, Bill Webb, he was around, we had just started Major League Rugby when my twins were just born. We're talking about fatherhood, and I was like, any advice? And he said, just love them, just love them. And I think all walks of my life now that continues to ring a bell. It's the same thing in business. Like, just love it. Love the people you work with. Love the experience and all of the other things that flow from there, like transparency and trust and being clear and having a role and understanding. All of those pieces flow to there because of that, And I think if that's the driving factor, then really good things happen and you also have a great experience with it. So just love them.
It's a tremendous North Star that'll always lead you in the right
Yeah.
direction. That's a great one for sure.
Yeah.
All right, last one here. Another really tough question, but I'm gonna ask you anyway. And maybe I should say you can't say Boston because you're Free Jacks background, and maybe not like Salt Lake City either because of your background there. But tell
Yeah.
me, the rugby capital of the U.S. is
Oh,
blank.
besides Quincy, Massachusetts, can I say Quincy? Because it's in Boston. I think you look at the entire state of California, right? I think it's the vast majority of, well, not the vast majority, a lot of the players you're seeing are playing high quality high school rugby, playing then for great colleges. This is women and men, then playing for the national team, getting the pro levels. California has a lot to say in that. So your area, San Diego, up through LA, and of course into the San Francisco, Sacramento areas, you would have to say is probably the region.
There we go. I love it. I will definitely go
Only
back
because you said I couldn't
and
say Greater Boston,
try
which includes Dartmouth and Salt Lake. So
it out.
then, yeah.
So New England or California, you're bound to see some good rugby in
Yeah,
those areas
yeah.
for sure. All right, Alex, you kicked ass in the conversion segment. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us, besides you and NMR, which we'll get to close out, just tell us your all-star poll. It can be a podcast, a newsletter, an Instagram handle, a TikTok, or YouTube, whatever. Just tell us who they are and why they're following.
Yeah, I think I'm probably, just classic. I love to follow SBJ, and just because you're seeing constant information come through. Sportico, I think, does a nice job. They've got a couple of, they run that a podcast as well. There's things like that. Acquired has always been a good one, go to the podcast. I just really enjoyed the ones they've done on sports, but all the ones they haven't done on sports equally, whether it's Starbucks, Microsoft, NVIDIA chips, and the research they do. Rolex was cool and Mars bars was cool, but the NBA, the one they did on the NFL, the one they did on the IPL, and they recently did one on F1. I think it's just chock full of awesome lessons. Pretty cool.
I look forward to a 4-hour acquired podcast
Yeah,
about Major League
yeah.
Rugby someday. That would be
Yes,
fantastic.
exactly. Let's get that
Hell yeah.
done.
And how about
Yeah.
you? Where can we find you as well as all things MLR across web, digital, social? Where do you want to send us?
Yeah, I'm at Alex Magleby, and then majorleague.rugby, is the website, and there's handles everywhere, MLR, on everything, which is great.
Check them out, doing great work. Alex is doing great work as well as his team. Major League Rugby is producing great content, having great games,
We
great
run a
matches.
podcast like at a weekly inside the MLR, and I think it's probably a shift from what other sports leagues do. Me is basically the co-commissioner. I'm on a show every week at the end of all our games to answer fan questions directly, talk about the game, talk about what's happening, just to make sure we're being as transparent as we possibly can as we all continue to grow this thing. So that's inside the MLR. We'll check that out.
Fantastic. No, it's so open and welcoming. It's a great league that's caught my eye for years now, and it's great to see the continued success. And the season's about to kick off, so you go check out a match if you're close enough, or check them out on social or online on ESPN. It's been a pleasure being able to get to the limit.
You have two options at 3 p.m. Pacific on Saturday. You can go to Great Park in Orange County and catch an amazing game live where the Legion are hosting Anthem, which has, 40% of the players on the field play for the national team. But you have still like one of the best players for the Argentine national team playing. It's going to be an awesome game. It's kind of the dads versus the young team, which would be really cool. If you can't get there in person, check it out on ESPN Plus
Beautiful. Thanks so much
Saturday.
again for coming on the podcast today, Alex. It's been a pleasure to learn all about rugby, Major League Rugby, from you this afternoon.
It was awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Just tremendous stuff with Alex Magleby, president of Major League Rugby, with a focus on strategy and communications. Just what an awesome opportunity to be able to pick his brain, learn about how they're approaching things. Tons of good insights and examples. And I said it a little bit in the interview, but Alex himself is a truly one of the pioneers of rugby in the United States. So one of the GOAT players, a great coach, played for US Rugby and has founded the New England Free Jacks, or was one of the early owners there, and now with Major League Rugby at the highest levels. And wherever rugby ends up in the next 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it might be, Alex will continue to play a big role in it. We're really awesome and really privileged to be able to speak to him today and learn from him today and understand where the sport is going in the US and where the league is going as well. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again to Alex. Thanks again to you for downloading, listening, watching, however you consume this podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Find me on Twitter, NJ27, also on LinkedIn. The website is dsmsports.net. And of course, the podcast is available on your podcast platform is your favorite. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.